Good afternoon. Hope you had a good weekend. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us here on Midday. Today, it's another installment in our series of Conversations with the Candidates. My guest is Delegate Harry Bhandari, who represents Baltimore County in the General Assembly. He's running for Congress in the 2nd District for a seat that is currently held by 11-term Representative Dutch Rupersberger, who will retire when his current term ends. District 2 encompasses parts of Carroll and Baltimore counties, as well as a little bit of Baltimore City. Delegate Bhandari was born in Nepal. He emigrated to the United States in 2005. I misspoke at the very top of the program. I said he was in his mid-30s. In fact, he was in his mid-20s. After losing a bid for the House of Delegates in 2014, he ran again and won in 2018, becoming the first Nepali-American to win election to a state legislature in the country. Delegate Bhandari chairs the Maryland Legislative Asian American Pacific Islander Caucus, and he serves on the House Health and Government Operation Committee. He is 46 years old. He holds bachelor's and master's degrees from Tribhuvan University in Nepal and a PhD in Literacy and Culture Studies from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Dr. Bhandari teaches in the Baltimore City Public Schools and as an adjunct faculty member at Baltimore City Community College. He's married with 2 children. He and his family live in Nottingham, Maryland. If you have a question for the delegate, you are welcome to join us. Our number here is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Delegate Bhandari joins us on Zoom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
So the field of candidates on the Democratic side in this primary for the 2nd District is 6 people. It includes a very well-known politician, Johnny Olszewski Jr., who is the Baltimore County executive, also a former member of the House of Delegates. What distinguishes you in this fairly large field? And in particular, why should voters give you a look instead of Mr. Olszewski?
Thank you, Tom. Well, first of all, I would like to thank you again for your dedication to delivering these insightful interviews and meaningful discussion with such a diverse.
Oh, it looks like we're having a little trouble with our Zoom call. Delegate, it's possible that you've muted yourself. Delegate, if you can hear me, it'd be best if you unmuted yourself. Our tech folks are telling us that that's our problem right now.
I do that my path was marked by challenges. At just 11, I embarked on a grueling 2-hour trek to school to go and come home, where even basic amenities like water and electricity were scarce luxury. And with my father serving in the military, and my parents would have to take care of 7 siblings to support. My mornings begin with working alongside mother in the fields and tending to our cattle, and followed by backbreaking work in the paddy fields during the monsoon season. Today, those experiences drive my passion to break down barriers and ensure every child has access to opportunities. Initiative like the Build to Learn Act that we did fight in the Maryland General Assembly, bringing new school to my district in our county and state, filled me with humility and hope for a brighter future, and helped me understand why my granddad built a school in a village despite all the hurdles that he would have to go for a hunger strike to build a school.
What brought you to America in 2005?
2005, I came here to present a paper at George Mason University on at a literary seminar.
And then what was behind your decision to pursue a doctorate and to stick around, become a citizen?
One of the great inspirations was when I was in Nepal. I was pretty much as an English major exposed with Western literature. And when I was very young, I had an opportunity to study life. I mean, to know what life, liberty, and pursuit of social happiness, that happiness is, the Declaration of Independence, you know, and in this country. This country is not only wealthiest in the, on Earth, but you know, this is the most generous country on Earth. So those life, liberty, and pursuit of social happiness really fascinated me, and the diverse culture.
And what appeals to you and attracts you to politics? Why did you run for office in the Maryland General Assembly?
Thank you. In my journey, Tom, as you know, that began far from these halls of the Maryland General Assembly, starting as an English teacher and principal at a tender age in Nepal. And my advocacy for student and passion for education sparked my interest in public service. This passion only grew stronger when I moved to the U.S., where I worked night shift at a Baltimore gas station. Experiencing firsthand the struggles of working class Americans, my political journey in the U.S. was deeply inspired by my role as a super volunteer for President Obama's campaign, where I knocked on thousands of doors in neighboring state. Witnessing Obama's visit to Baltimore in 2000 was a very defining moment for me, highlighting the impact of leadership and change. And then I was involved in homeowner president here in my neighborhood, working at local commissions. Then I was the officer in Baltimore County Young Dems, and I was the National Secretary of Young Democrats of America Minority Caucus, elected member of Baltimore State Central Committee, and I have an honor to be a state delegate. And the decision to run for Congress is my commitment to public service, further fueled by my experience in the Maryland General Assembly. From the gas station to in Baltimore to completing my PhD and dedicating years to teaching in public school. My journey actually embodies the real American dream of 21st century.
Delegate Harry Bhandari represents the 8th District in the Maryland House of Delegates, and he's running in the Democratic primary for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. That's a seat currently held by Dutch Ruppersberger, who will be retiring next January. Our number, if you have a question for the delegate, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So, Delegate, I know that one of the bills you sponsored, which did pass in this past General Assembly, the 2024 Assembly, it's on the governor's desk, as far as I know, had to do with emergency room wait times. Tell us about that bill and why you proposed it.
Oh, thank you. It's one of the most important bills. And during my tenure in the General Assembly, I've been privileged to pass close to 24 significant bills, to be exact, 23 bills, addressing a wide range of critical needs from public health to education and safety. And most importantly, this is the great bill. Last year, I took a leading role in tackling a critical issues facing our state, the excessively long emergency department wait times in Maryland, which were reported to be longest in the nation by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We initiated a task force that led to a collaborative work group under the guidance of Maryland Hospital Association. And this group diligently worked to pinpoint the core reason behind these delays. And our concerted efforts led to creation and passage of my bill, HB 1143, this year, establishing the Maryland Emergency Department Wait Time Reduction Commission. This new law directly stems from our commitment to enhancing healthcare, logistic, and improving patient care across our state. The commission is charged with ensuring that patients are seen in the most appropriate setting to reduce unnecessary use of emergency services, improving hospital efficiency by increasing throughput in emergency and inpatient care, and enhancing post-discharge resources to facilitate timely release from care. And this further, this commission will work on identifying and recommending improvement for the data collections necessary to monitor and reduce wait time, and making recommendations to state and local agencies, hospital and healthcare providers, and facilitating this year, sharing of best practices for reducing emergency department wait times. It is a testament to what we can achieve through focused legislative action, and I look forward to seeing the positive impact of this law in action in our state.
It brings up an interesting philosophical argument, which is the capacity of government to fix problems within certain sectors, within certain industries, in this case, healthcare. No one would deny that emergency room wait times are terribly long here in Maryland. I myself had a situation last November where I was in an emergency room at one of the big hospitals here in Baltimore for 11 hours and was never seen by a physician. I finally just gave up and went home. So there's no doubt that this is happening, and I know this anecdotally as well as statistically, but I wonder, the hospitals are certainly very much aware that this is a problem as well. The hospitals have shortages of nurses. They have shortages of doctors nationwide. We have a shortage of people in the healthcare field, to be sure. I wonder if a commission is necessary to animate or motivate hospitals to address the problem of emergency room wait times. How do you think this commission will increase the capacity of hospitals who already have a pretty well-defined problem of personnel shortages?
Yeah, thank you so much. As a legislator serving in the Health and Government Operations Committee, I'm really sorry for what you have to go through. Absolutely, you are absolutely right. With this legislation, we have we passed a lot of other legislation as well. Like one of the legislation, Access to Care Act, our taxpayer dollars goes to hospital over $130 million to $150 million in uncompensated care. And a lot of those folks without insurance are making this wait time even worse. That measure will definitely help, and there are a lot of accountability issues as well, that how we could improve hospital efficiencies, by increasing this inpatient care and post-discharge resources and timely release from care. And if needed, the state will help. And this is the first time that our health department is in charge of this, and there are accountability of this as well. And definitely, rather than pointing finger at hospital, a lot of other issues are included in this. And our committee and General Assembly is very serious, and we pass a lot of legislation that will help. And one of the best thing I would say is the commission will work on identifying and recommending improvement for the data collections necessary to monitor. And it's not overnight solution, but this legislation is in the right directions.
And you mentioned that you serve in the Maryland House on the Health and Government Operations Committee. What committee or committees would you aspire to serve on if you're elected to Congress?
Working in the Health and Government Operations Committee, this year, we strengthen IT governance with new AI policies, enhance support for veterans, empower the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights to seek direct monetary relief for discrimination victims, and expanded healthcare professional roles to better address shortages. And we also improve long-term care oversight, broaden health insurance access, regulated pharmaceutical practices, and absolutely being a teacher, lifelong teacher, I would love to serve in the committee that deals with more like health, and if possible, that my first preference would be to do something with education. And I'm okay with the Foreign Relations Committee as well because of my international background.
Delegate Harry Bhandari represents the 8th District in the House of Delegates. He's a candidate in the Democratic primary for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the issues affecting the 2nd District and the nation at large. As a candidate for Congress, we'll see where Dr. Bhandari stands on various issues. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org if you'd like to join us and pose a question for this candidate in the 2nd Congressional District. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our show, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Harry Dunn. He's a former Capitol Police officer whose experience at the January 6, 2021 insurrection led him to seek the Democratic nomination for Congress in the 3rd District. That's the district currently held by Representative John Sarbanes. Harry Dunn will join me tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Delegate Harry Bhandari. He is one of 6 candidates in the Democratic primary for the 2nd Congressional District. That's the seat that Dutch Ruppersberger has held for more than 20 years. There are 3 open seats in the Maryland Congressional Delegation, part of the House of Representatives. David Trone is leaving his position in the 6th District. John Sarbanes leaving his in the 3rd. And Dutch Ruppersberger leaving his in the 2nd. And of course, the Senate also has an open seat, with Senator Ben Cardin announcing his retirement. And there is a very tight race between David Trone and Angela also Brooks to succeed Senator Cardin in the Senate, or at least to get the nomination to run to succeed Senator Cardin in the Senate. If you'd like to join us in our conversation today with Delegate Harry Bhandari, our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. So, Delegate Bhandari, how has the bridge collapse, the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, affected your constituents in the 8th District, and what have you done to respond to the needs that they may have?
Yeah, thank you so much for that great questions. We were in the General Assembly when bridge collapsed, and I really do like to appreciate our governor effort in that regard. You know, this is the major economic engine for our state. And it has hampered. Number one is traffic. It has been worse. You know, so we are doing whatever we can do to make sure that the public knows this alternative route and going in communities and making sure that our federal government and local government and the state government are working together to make sure that we will have a brand new bill, a breeze.
And in your position as the chair of the AAPI caucus in the Maryland General Assembly, the Asian American Pacific Islander caucus, what have your priorities in that regard been?
I mean, one of the thing is like those folks who lost their life. It is very, very disheartening as an immigrant myself. And I can't think their children without their father. And we all were sleeping midnight at 1 when those workers were working on the bridge, serving Maryland. So one of the most important thing is how to help their children and providing the resources. And there was a CASA Baltimore event. I went with my chair and met with folks. And even in the General Assembly, I'm proposing a bill. We know that this is an immigration thing. It's a more like a federal thing that, you know, I drafted a bill to make sure that those children will have easy access to all these you know, all these resources, and plus if possible that we could expedite their green card, making sure that they will have the same opportunity their father, you know, they passed away. And it's very disheartening.
Yeah, and of course, as you mentioned, the workers on the bridge, mostly Latino workers. You have worked with the AAPI caucus, the Asian American Pacific Islander caucus, as its chair in the Maryland General Assembly. For the AAPI community, what has the What have the main priorities been that your caucus has been concentrating on?
Yeah, the priorities are almost the same. One of the priority is the hate crime. And Tom, Maryland has over 500,000 Asian Americans, and our nation has over 21 million Asian Americans. Our priority is how to engage Asian Americans to this political participation and linguistic integration. We want them to come to their government, either local, state, or federal, and advocate for the same issues like healthcare, like education. These are the main screaming issues. And we do strongly believe that if hospitals are better, schools are better, and our infrastructure are better, you know, it's good for Democrat, Republican, or no party, Asian, African American, or European, and everybody. So we are focusing more on educating them. And it is very disheartening that very few of them, the research shows that only 3% Asian American, they contact their elected officer in their lifetime. And that is a big threat to democracy as well, if they do not participate. In a lot of countries they come from, we come from, has a different the government system, right? So it is very, very important that they understand our democratic values and they participate. And without the instruction, Tom, there cannot be engagement or inspiration. And that is a huge deal and our responsibility. And we need to show our character, commitment, and confidence to that front.
Harry Bhandari is a member of the House of Delegates here in Maryland. He's was elected in 2019. He's now a candidate for Congress in the 2nd District. Our number here at midday on today's edition of Conversations with the Candidates is 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So, Delegate Bhandari, as you go around the 2nd Congressional District and speak with voters, what are they telling you are the big issues that are top of mind for them? What are top of mind for you as a person who's potentially can win an election to represent the 2nd District? What district-specific issues do you think are going to be top priorities?
Oh, thank you. When I go to see the constituents all the way from Middle River to Kearney to Towson to Timonium to Caucusville to Reisterstown to Wings Mill, all the way to Westminster, Amstead to Manchester to 20 Town. The issues are one of the concern, I hear from them was the safety issues, crime. I believe we need an approach that combines mental health support, targeted federal funding for crime reduction, and substantial investment in education. I was very disheartened to see all this gun violence myself and a community member, actually a student died. He was just 25 years old to gun violence. And these communities are not happy what is going on, and access to mental health treatment and effective recovery program is very, very critical as well, as this can substantially decrease crime rates by supporting individuals prone to criminal behavior. They want us to strongly advocate for the targeted application of funds, ensuring that they are dedicated solely to initiative promoting safer communities. As we know, that addressing crime head on, we need to improve schools, and a lot of them want, they appreciate that we are we have a record funding in education, pre-K, blueprint of blueprint we passed, and we made sure that General Assembly made sure that we have resources to do that funding, and they appreciate that as well. and enhancing educational environment and providing adequate school resources. They say it is very vital measures to prevent crime by offering young people opportunity for personal and academic growth. And I also strongly believe that investing in education contribute to the development of well-rounded individuals who are less likely to engage in criminal activities, thereby addressing another of foundational cause of crime. As a teacher in Baltimore City public school system, I've seen at my school student dying on the parking lot. And I introduced the peace and conflict studies bill, and I'm still working on it. Tom, if we do not have peace in our mind, we can't create peace anywhere. And we want to make sure that our children have a tool in their toolbox that to resolving how to resolve the conflict. That is very, very important. There is conflict everywhere in politics, in cybersecurity, but our kids don't know how to resolve the conflict. That's the biggest issues.
And what school do you teach at here in Baltimore City?
I teach at Morgan Taylor High School.
Mm-hmm. That's Mayor Brandon Scott's alma mater.
Correct. yeah.
When you talk about targeted crime reduction at the federal level, are you talking also then about gun regulation and what sorts of federal gun proposals would you favor?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about the safety, I work closely. Even though I serve in the General Assembly, I have introduce a bill in the name of a student who got killed, Sagar Gimire Act. We need to really, really make sure that, you know, these guns are controlled, they should not be accessible. These two incidents really changed my mind that these guns should not be accessible. And we need to make sure that there is access to mental health treatment. It's not just the one gun thing. And there are other things as well that is really, really creating these issues. Like in the case of the student who got killed and I was emotionally attached, the person who killed him had mental health issues. And I reached out to our government in Baltimore County, a state attorney. And I went through over 100 pages of his document, what was going on in his life. And he has hallucinations. And my question is, even though we do have all these laws, red flag law, and it seems like they're not functioning, only passing laws is not going to help, Tom. We need to implement this as well. And his parents and so many parents that who lost their children asking the demand. And it is very, very important that we look all these laws, existing laws, and pass new laws and work together. I understand there's a Second Amendment. Folks always debate. But if we are losing our constituents, this is not in the long run. We can't function as a county, state, or country. This is very, very important. And it is a personal to me as well. Like I've seen firsthand the impact of the conflict in Nepal in long war, where 13,000-14,000 they died. And there are the effect. And still, like so many, they lost their limb, they lost their family members and job. And, you know, I've seen it firsthand. So this is not Democrat or Republican issues. This is our nation's issues, and we all have to come together on these issues to make sure that we control these guns.
And I want to move on to immigration, and Robin is on the line from Towson, who has a question about immigration as well. Welcome to the program with Delegate Harry Bhandari.
Thanks, Tom. Mr. Bhandari, it's great to hear you. I'm as you probably know, we have this huge dysfunctional immigration system in this country, and it's a source of a lot of debate and rancor, probably. you have some first-hand experience with the immigration system, so I'm wondering how that experience informs your view of what needs to be done to solve our immigration issues and debate. And I'm guessing that you've been had a lot of time to think about this, so to the extent that you can be pretty precise, that would be great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for the call. As I said, this is our national issues. We should be very serious about it, and we should not be making a political football to these issues. And the situation at the U.S. southern border does present challenges necessitating a nuisance approach that respects both our security needs and humanitarian obligations. And I advocate for a very comprehensive immigration reform that includes clear citizenship pathways for dreamers that are integral to our society, deserving a straightforward route to citizenship. We need to do the visa program reform to protect workers and ensure fair treatment, aligning with our economic needs and labor rights. And we need to streamline this asylum processes, making the system more efficient and fair, and helping those genuinely seeking refuge to do so in a timely manner, and enhance border security balance with human dignity. Security enhancements are very, very crucial as well, but must also respect human rights and international obligations. And we need to make sure that we uphold American legacy as a beacon of hope, ensuring a balanced approach to immigration that prioritizes fairness, humanity, and rule of law. And we have to work together. We can secure our borders while maintaining our core values, providing that security and compassion can coexist.
And Senator Lankford from Oklahoma crafted a bill in the Senate. Took him 4 or 5 months to negotiate what many people think is one of the most conservative immigration bills to come down the pike in quite a while. The Senate sent it to the House, and Speaker Mike Johnson has tabled it and has decided not to bring it to the floor of the House. Senator Lankford's bill includes things like making applications for asylum much more difficult. Do you support the Senate bill that went to the House, were it ever to come to the House floor for a vote?
Yeah, my decision to support any legislation, Tom, particularly on an issue as complex as immigration reform, hinges on its alignment with core principle of fairness, humanity, and security. The bill, despite its intent to force bipartisan solution, faced significant hurdles, not least due to external political pressure that ultimately led to its rejection. The situation highlighted the deeply polarized nature of our current political landscape and the challenge of legislating in such an environment. Would I have voted for it? In principle, yes, because it represented a step toward addressing critical needs in our immigration system and reaffirming our commitment to international allies. However, my support for any bill is conditional on its details and its potential impact on those it affects. True progress requires legislation that balances security with respect for human rights, aligned with our values, and serve the best interests of all Americans. The failure of this bill serves as a reminder of the work still needed to achieve.
And let's see if we get one more call in before we take a quick break. Let's go to Omar in White Marsh. Omar, welcome to Midday with Delegate Harry Bhandari. I understand you have a question about education.
Yes, Mr. Bhandari, I'm glad to hear your voice. I hope you join the list of great Asian Americans like Grace Lee Boggs and Yuri Nochiyama, who made great connections between the Asian and African American communities. I'm a physician and an anthropologist. My question to you about education is the following. How do you propose in a system that doesn't have enough teachers and maybe enough of many things to get some kind of synergy so that we can box above our weight, so that we get the maximum out of what we do have, because oftentimes there's a lot of waste, et cetera. So my question to you is kind of a systems theory choice. How do we get the most efficiency? What would you propose that we do differently? Do we get extra tutors? Do we bring people out of retirement? Well, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm very happy that you have a PhD education. My parents were educators. So you're the right man. So please tell us what you think at a even at a theoretical level, what can we do to squeeze what we do have to get a great multiplier and synergistic effect so that we get more kids who have more hope and a successful life?
All right. Thanks for that question, Omar. I like this notion of boxing above our weight when it comes to education. Delegate Bhandari, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, as a legislator and a lifelong school teacher, this question is very personal to me. First of all, we need to make sure that, you know, we do respect teacher. I started teaching career when I was 17 years old. In so many parts of the world, teachers are highly respected. We need to start from there. And I take pride that this year, our $63 billion budget legislation includes funding supports, the blueprint through fiscal year 27, through this tobacco tax revenue, ensuring commitment to pre-K, reading proficiencies, and teacher recruitment and community school that are upheld, and adjustment to tier this to pre-K income eligibility and increased funding aimed to expand pre-K programs. Why I did talk about this pre-K is like any student who starts strong will finish strong. It is very, very important. Like when you do not come from wealthy background, our students should not be falling behind. And to come out of the poverty and to tackle all these issues, education is a key to development, to build infrastructure. So if I win, I will definitely make sure that we invest in education and basically a public education. If I would not be educated, I do still remember if my granddad would not have built a school, if I would not have walked 2 hours back and forth every day, you know, and left home at the age of 15, you know, and came to America and get education, I would not be talking with Tom Hall and you. And this is very crucial. And we have to come together to make sure that there is adequate funding in education and come together again and make sure that the person like me who has a real life experience working with the kids, inner city schools, that we could really, really make some changes. Like in during my tenure in General Assembly, I passed home and hospital teaching bill. I was a lead sponsor of that bill, and I passed a bill to make sure that these sex offenders are not allowed in the schools. And these are the things that come from everyday experience. So in the legislation, the experience is needed. I don't consider myself as a politician. I'm a school teacher. So we need the real teacher, real doctors, or real nurses to make sure that they have a solution, what is going on in a day-to-day activities.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Harry Bhandari has been a member of the House of Delegates since 2019. We're talking about his campaign for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. We'll have more with Delegate Bhandari after our quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, if you want to join us when we return. And before we go to that break, each week here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 54 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified 2 people who were killed last week. They are Jose Castron Morales, age 38, and Unique Hassan Faust. He was 31 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today is Delegate Harry Bhandari. He's running in the Democratic primary for Congress in the 2nd District. District 2 encompasses parts of Carroll and Baltimore counties, as well as a little bit of Baltimore City. Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger has represented the district since 2003. He announced his intention to retire when his term expires in January of next year. There are 6 candidates in the Democratic primary in the 2nd District, including Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr. There are 3 candidates in the Republican primary for District 2, including talk show host Kim Klasick, who ran unsuccessfully for Congress in the 7th District back in 2020. Delegate Harry Bhandari is with me on Zoom until the top of the hour. You are welcome to join us as well. Our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. So, Delegate, I do want to ask you about some foreign policy issues. Before we get to that, we're going to go to Matt in Baltimore. You've already made some comments about immigration, but Matt, I guess you have one more quick question about immigration for the Delegate. What is it?
It's not a quick question. It's really to consider something, because what I really loved about what he said was that he really looks at everything and he doesn't like something to be a political football. And I think that immigration is an excellent example of a political football. I'm working with a number of organizations that our concept is, and I want to hear what he thinks of it, is that really it's not an immigration issue. This country absolutely needs these people who come here to work. And if every one of them was sent home, we would be in very big trouble. However, I think that we can also agree that they came over illegally when other people are in line, that they should need to be able to get work visas. They finish their work, they go home. That way it would stop all the illegal immigration. People need to get jobs, get money, send it back to their families, go home when the job is done. That would, you know, set up a system that should really be international. Everybody should have that opportunity. Come, you need, countries need workers. Workers come, they work, they go home.
Okay, but, there's one thing to have a job and do a specific thing, and it's another thing to have a career and establish roots in the community. But thank you for the call, Matt. Delegate, in terms of temporary work visas, is that part of the mix of things that should be involved in any comprehensive immigration reform?
Thank you so much, because being the first Nepalese American ever elected in the country, my office has been a lifeline for minorities, aiding bereaved family, assisting immigrant families through federal partnership and tackling all these local issues. Honestly speaking, there are people who are waiting to have interview for their asylum case for 10, 15 years, and they are totally away from their families. They want to go home, and they are contributing to the economy as well. Absolutely, we need to have a visa program reforms. We need to protect workers, as I said, and ensure fair treatment as well. And if we have that two-way kind of traffic, these immigrants will contribute to our nation as well. I know, but we are not wealthiest, but we are generous as well. But to function as a country as well, we have to make sure that everything we do with that same character, same commitment, and confidence. Definitely, we should come together. It's not one-party issues, Tom.
And let me ask you about foreign policy as we finish up here in our last couple of minutes. What should the posture of the United States be towards Israel and its prosecution of the war in Gaza?
Okay, so, there should be two-way state solution in that issues. And we need to make sure that any country has their right to defend their territory, but uh, but the But in the meantime, that we should make sure that that the strategy that emphasized the immediate ceasefire, recognizing that stopping the loss of lives in an essential preliminary step toward a substantial peace process. My perspective is significantly, as I said, set by my personal experience as an immigrant who has witnessed the harrowing effect of war. This experience have taught me the critical importance of this peace and the decisive step needed to achieve it. Regarding our relationship with Israel, I believe in a carefully calibrated strategies where this help is linked to concrete advancement toward a two-state solution. I'm convinced that this approach offers the most feasible pathway to securing lasting peace and facilitating mutual recognition and security between Israel and Palestine. And this belief is driven by a vision of a future where both communities can live in dignity without fear and violence.
Is eliminating the military capacity of Hamas a legitimate and doable goal for the Israeli government and for the United States to support?
They are terrorists. They should be held accountable, and we have a capacity. We need to make sure that we help our allies. But in the meantime, United States, as I said in the beginning of our interview, life, liberty, and pursuit of social happiness. We have to make sure that our responsibility is like diplomatic channel. Recent events in the Middle East, including Iran's attack on Israel, they highlight the urgent need for diplomatic solution to escalate this tension. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken announcement of this coordinative initiative, that highlights it. There should be at the end of the day, no matter what, either in the First World War or Second World War during 1914 or 1945, we came in the conclusion with a peace agreement. So there is the only solution to war is a negotiation, and we have that capacity and we have that power. And the war is not a solution. But in the meantime, our history shows that if anybody thinks that United States is not paying attention, they should know that our country will react. But now, when comes to peace and security, and we have an obligation as a nation, as a country that has the rules and believe in democracy.
All right, Delegate, that's all the time we have. Harry Bhandari is a delegate in the General Assembly representing Baltimore County. He's also a candidate for Congress in the Democratic primary in the 2nd Congressional District. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Primary day is May 14th. Early voting begins on May 2nd. You can request a mail-in ballot for the primary by mail or by dropping off the form at an election office no later than May 7th. You can request a mail-in ballot by email no later than May 10th. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Harry Dunn. He's running in the 3rd Congressional District for Congress. And this note about a debate for candidates of Baltimore City and Baltimore City Council President. Tomorrow night, I'll moderate a forum at Emmanuel Episcopal Church. Starts at 6 o'clock, and I hope to see you there. Coming up now, it's Fresh Air. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.